Hey everyone, I'm your host Tom Shaughnessy and welcome back to Chain Reaction, a research-driven podcast that's a part of Delphi Digital. If you're not on Delphi's research portal, you're missing out on the critical analysis read by the top minds in the crypto space, so be sure to check it out. One quick housekeeping item, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. I may personally hold tokens mentioned on the podcast, and you can view our show notes below for our complete disclosures.
Hey guys, I wanted to tell you about Delta Exchange. If you're looking to trade crypto futures and options, check out Delta Exchange, where you can trade futures on Bitcoin and leading altcoins with up to 100 times leverage. Delta also offers options on Bitcoin and altcoins, spread contracts, and interest rate swaps. Launched in 2018 and backed by industry leaders like CoinFund and Aave, Delta is a secure and trusted platform to trade crypto derivatives. Head over to delta.exchange to trade with strong liquidity and low trading fees. Now back to our episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy, I'm the host of the Chain Reaction segment. Today I have on Frank Monk, who's the COO of Helium Network. Frank, how's it going?
Hey Tom, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course, man. We had Amir on, we did a node on you guys. I run a couple of nodes, so I'm amped to have you guys on.
Thank you.
So Frank, what is Helium Network for those who don't know? I don't know how you wouldn't at this point, but for those who don't.
Yeah, Helium is a company that is on a mission to build a network globally that allows IoT sensors, small little devices, to connect to the internet openly and as low cost as possible. So that's the mission we're on. And to achieve this goal, we've essentially created both parts as well as a platform that's decentralized. And so the crux of what we do now is we've created something called the Helium blockchain, which you can think of as an incentive mechanism to encourage everyone, individuals and neighbors and consumers alike, to go out and help us build a network. And so the Helium hotspot, which is the picture right there behind me, or it's this thing, is sort of where Helium started. We're a seven-year-old company, and this Helium hotspot is both a full node on the blockchain, as well as it provides long-range, lower-WAN connectivity for sensors.
That's awesome. I actually just got one of the tabs in the mail so I could track things with it. Yeah. And I have a bunch of nodes at home and at the office as well. So Frank, how exactly has that incentive structure worked, right? Because when I first found you guys like a year ago, there was 1,000 or 2,000 nodes on the network. Now there's 12,000. How are you incentivizing people to go out and buy nodes and actually run the network?
Yeah, the objective is to have global coverage. And so we need we need lots of hotspots everywhere. And we do want density, certainly in urban areas, so that applications and devices like the little tabs you have, has great connectivity anywhere it goes, both indoors and outdoors, right? And the goal here is to achieve something that Wi-Fi and Bluetooth have a hard time with, which is outdoors. If you go outside of your home or your office and you want to track your dog or your purse or your car, it's the only option you have really is cellular that's viable. But cellular comes at a cost, both on data plan as well as battery life. And so using LoRaWAN and this Helium network that's out there solves both of those problems, both power, we're talking years of battery life, and cost-wise, you know, for that little tab thing, if you wanted to track that every 5 minutes for a year, it's like a buck a year, which is nothing. And so, you know, to achieve this, we have to have density in urban areas, and we have to have, you know, coverage everywhere, you know, in rural areas as well. And so that the incentive structure for any individual to participate, whether it's from the beginning when we only had, you know, 0 to 100 units in Austin, Texas, or now 12,000 and beyond, you really have to think about a couple of things here. Two, I would say, one, cost of the hotspot themselves. I showed you the hotspot earlier. That was our early original Helium hotspot. Cost to the end user early on was $495 to buy that plus tax. It's expensive, and it's a risk, right? Who knows what this is? Who knows if it works? And so there's a leap of faith. And so for taking that leap of faith, you're paying more money for that, but you're early and you mine more. as a result of that, because you're mining for longer. Now you can buy a different version of this. We've open sourced everything. So you have third parties like Rack Wireless building their version of a what they call the Rack Hotspot Miner. And that device costs $249. So it's half the price of what we were charging. But at the same time, there's more people mining. So, but the cost of entry is lower, for one. And mining is certainly pressured because there's less mining per individual hotspot. However, it's costing you less. The other thing is early days, you know, Tom, when you started, certainly, what was the value of helium HNT? Who knows, right? It was all over the counter. There was really no market price that was set. And today, you know, thankfully, the market demand has driven lots of listings, and helium HNTs, you know, you can find it on Binance US if you're based in the US. If you're international, Binance.com, you can go there. And there's a number of others in China, like Hu and Blaxi. And I think there's more and more now, FTX, you can go on and you can trade. And that, so there's a value for the token today, which there wasn't before. So the risk is lower, the cost of entry is lower, but you're mining less. But I think, you know, for those that are spreadsheet oriented, all the variables are in place. You can do your own math and you can figure out if this is something you want to participate in or not participate.
Yeah, no, that's a great overview. I'm actually, so I'm not annoyed, but I missed the days when I would mine so much HNT and no one was on the network. But I mean, granted, the price was not there at all. So it really, it's all, you know, looking back. But I guess the interesting thing here is, though, I mean, you not only lowered the cost of the hotspots, but you open sourced it. So now you have other providers providing them way cheaper. But the other thing I noticed is there's a couple of new companies out there that are basically white labeling helium and just giving consumers, you know, $100 cash to run a node. The economics, for those who know, is great to that companies, but for the end user, they don't know. And on the flip side, it helps you guys build out your coverage globally. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. You know, our community is absolutely amazing. You know, the developers, the technical community on Discord, there's a whole cast of characters there. I think we're over 5,000 members now. And yeah, this is amazing, right? Because this whole thing really started August 1st of 2019. So here we are in November 2020, 5,000 plus strong just on the technical side. And the folks there are not only technical, IoT oriented, blockchain, crypto oriented, but they're entrepreneurs. And you know, I gotta give them shouts out. They're doing a great job. Guys like Meshify and Zatify and Emirate. They were there really early, probably the same time you joined, Tom. They jumped in and they've come up with a mix of models and they've evolved over time. And what I'm talking about is they would buy, you know, more than one hotspot. They would buy whatever, you know, tens or hundreds of hotspots. And they would offer
I'm jealous
them,
of those patrons.
I mean, but hey, it was risky. I mean, they bought these things for like $500 a piece. Right? It's not cheap.
Very early on. Yeah, no, you're right. It was there. A risk.
Yeah, it was a huge risk. They took the risk. They bought the hotspots. And then they just went on like social media and offered hotspots for free to people that were willing to put the hotspots in their home. And I like that idea. And I still do, because I think we as a company, we couldn't get the price down. Believe me, we would love for the hotspot to be free. The goal is to build a network. The goal isn't to make money on selling hotspots. Just so we're clear with everyone. Helium's not making money selling hotspots. We had to build a hotspot to start because no one believed us. You know, we talked to the LoRaWAN community. We wanted manufacturers within the LoRaWAN community to just build this and use our blockchain, but no one would. I mean, why would they? We were either crazy or we were lying, right? One or the two. Thankfully, we're not lying. We are crazy. The goal is our data. It's right.
But so Frank, I mean, you guys covered the US and you're now covering the globe with coverage. Yes. And you're not out there hopping on wireless towers for American Tower or Crown Castle or buildings.
That's right.
You're not spending billions of dollars. You're not rolling trucks out. You don't have to hire 1,000 people. Like, does the wireless community understand how impressive that is?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. We're, you know, we've certainly through our history, you know, we've talked to guys like AT&T and Verizon, Comcast, certainly their venture arms. We are a venture backed company. We're a startup. So we have talked to those folks. You know, and like, I don't blame them necessarily. It's an extremely novel idea, and the approach is unproven. Yeah. And the closest analogy I can think of is sort of like Airbnb and Uber. And I know both Airbnb and Uber founders, when they first started, they were faced with lots of resistance, right? You know, I have a taxi cab. Why would I ride in your car, Tom? I don't know who you are, but I, for some reason, trust yellow cab. I mean, I think those days are over. I don't even think there's yellow cabs anymore. Or they're all on the platform. The drivers are all Uber drivers or Lyft drivers. And the same with Airbnb. You know, imagine convincing someone to come to someone's house and pay $60 to sleep on the couch or an air mattress.
Crazy before that, yeah.
Who would actually open their home for a stranger? And two, who would actually go rent that? Right. But now I think it's commonplace, right? I don't know if hotels
now it's
really are needed.
Yeah. You know, I know people my age would rather just do an Airbnb than a hotel. It's just a different generational thing.
And the thing is, it's not, I know you're a young dude, you know, it's not just your age, right? It's not just the millennials and Gen Zers. You know, I'm Gen X and I use Airbnb. I prefer it.
Oh, right? It's so much easier.
Yeah. It's so much easier. But that, again, when it first started, it took the guys at Airbnb, the team there, probably 7-8 years to really pick up steam, right? Because they had to deal with both supply and demand. They had to create a supply of apartments for people to rent, and they had to generate demand to go convince you to change your habit. Don't do what your parents did and rent a hotel. Try Airbnb, right? And that just takes time. It's human behavior. It's habits. And Helium really is taking that model, which is already complicated. It's already novel, right? But we're trying to take advantage of this sort of supply and demand, two-sided marketplace model and apply it to the telco, Crown Castle, American Tower world. The difference here is we added another layer of complexity. There's this thing called cryptocurrency and blockchain. That's the underpinning of that. And so, you know, for us, Helium has an education process that's a little bit more complicated than Airbnb and Uber, because now you have to understand the crypto aspect, the blockchain aspect, which is the main incentive driver, I think. And that's what's, I think, super unique. But also, I think from looking at it from the crypto lens, even though we're not like crypto native people, not that anyone really is a crypto native person, we are certainly like the furthest from that. But I think what we have done is found a very practical application of crypto and blockchain and applied it to an industry in this telco world that hasn't changed for what, I don't know, a couple hundred years. That has been zero change. It's a complete monopoly. There's a very few group of people that own that, and they're wealthy as hell. And the rest of us pay them. You know, my bill for this phone, right? It just keeps going up every year to use that data, right? And so why not? Like, why not figure out how to democratize that? Why not figure out how to disrupt that industry so that, you know, Tom, your friends and family, your neighborhood, your childhood friends, your community, they can benefit from it. Why can't we all become American Tower? Why couldn't we all be host a cell tower ultimately?
The hard part is, as much as I get that and I love it, like, let's all, you know, let's be our own cell tower. People don't understand that. All they get is, you know, how do I connect? How do I track my dog? But you know, you could say that too. I mean, the other question for you here though is like, do the users of the network care about the crypto aspect? Because in my mind, you guys use really cool crypto incentives to get people to buy nodes to provide coverage. But on the flip side, you know, are the people tracking their dog, tracking their Lime scooter, tracking their IoT in a factory? Do they care about any of that?
Yeah, it depends. I would say the good news is most of the large enterprises that we talk to, they understand that there's a crypto element. They're curious. They're not, I've seen a real shift in sentiment. I would say in 2018, at the height of like, just a lot of the fraud within crypto, a lot of the sort of hype that is all hype and not real, the negative sentiment that was created. And, you know, a lot of people point to ICOs and all that. That sort of has faded from my perspective. You know, when we go talk to large corporations, it doesn't matter what industry, they understand that there's a crypto blockchain element to what we do, but they're more curious about it. Less sort of, oh, you're if you're got crypto blockchain, then you must be a fraudster. We're not getting that. In 2017, in 2018 in particular, there was a bit of that. There was a bit of, I don't want to blockchain, crypto. Did you ICO? You know, if you did, I don't want to talk to you.
Like a lot of weird questions.
You must be a scammer. That's not there anymore, which is good. What I think the curiosity, I think, stems from, wow, you actually have, I've heard a lot about Bitcoin and Ethereum and all that. I really haven't seen a use case in this world of blockchain crypto. This seems like a really good use case. Like what you've done seems like a useful thing. And I can certainly use that as a large enterprise. I'm curious about it. How do I engage? If I don't have to touch the crypto piece, great, because I don't know how to. Like as an entity, if I'm like Nestle, who we work with, or Lime Scooter, I can't hold the crypto in my spreadsheets as a corporation in the United States of America. I don't know how to hold it. Like, what does the government? What do I call it? It's not U.S. dollar, right? What is it, right? So they don't. It's too hard, meaning that there's too much bureaucracy, paperwork, and tax implication. There's so many implications that they don't want to go open. It's a can of worms that they don't want to deal with it. So hence this data credit to token system that Helium created, the burn and mint equilibrium. We're getting to the crypto bit. This is important because the only reason we did that was so large corporations could think of the Helium network as a network as a service, no different than AWS or Google Cloud Platform or Xbox Live. Like everyone's used to buying credits for things. Like if you want to play games on Xbox Live, you got to subscribe. And, you know, there's another underlining currency powering your ability to play Fortnite on there. Or if you want to, you want to use AWS resources and get CPU and storage and all that. That's AWS credits. You got to go pay for credits. There's a system in there. That's the transaction system. Helium's the same thing. Ours is called Helium Data Credits, and it's basically pay per packet, right? You pay per packet to use the network. And when you talk to them in that way, they get it. Like, oh, yeah. Well, how much does it cost?
They can think in dollars.
Oh yeah, sure. But it's I get it. Oh yeah, I'll buy data credits all day. It's like it's a subscription model. I can account for that. It's almost like logistically they have the ability to account for it. So then therefore they're willing to actually take a look at it and try it. And so that's
you can't understate that. I mean, that's important. I mean, they need to be able to think about it. They need to be able to account for it. I mean, one of the super interesting things that I loved about your token econ is that it's inverse. So as the price of your native token Helium goes up, it's convertible into more data credits because data credits is pegged at a certain dollar value. And the flip side is also pretty interesting because if Helium goes down, I mean, you could still buy a ton of data credits, and then that would obviously potentially bid the price of HNT up, yada, yada. But the dual aspect of it is cool because it reduces the velocity and the thought process on the business side, and it also allows you guys to accrue some value.
Right. Exactly. So to answer your question, the concept of Helium and using a people-powered network is very intriguing for a lot of enterprises. The idea of subscribing or buying or accumulating data credits to use the network is no longer novel or foreign to them. They've been trained by Google Cloud and Amazon AWS, Microsoft Azure to do that, right? Everything is subscription-based now. So they're used to that cloud service or network as a service idea. So that's not a barrier. And so we were trying to find ways to just remove barriers of adoption. The probably the number one concern for most of the enterprises that we work with is network availability and overall SLAs and the ability to ensure them that, hey, there's an SLA on the network. And all that is risk mitigation, right? And so that's where either our ecosystem partners, which I prefer, or Helium would need to come up with a SLA service. And all that is, if you and I, we have SLAs on, like if we have YouTube TV or we have Netflix, there's some SLA. If Netflix goes down and we can't watch our favorite shows for a week, I'm sure there's some kind of thing, we get back like $5 or whatever, right? Same with our internet provider, right? And so that's all they're looking for. And it's most enterprises have this mentality. It's kind of like a checkbox, you know, regulation or compliance or governance or whatever. Mm-hmm. And someone just needs to say, yeah, okay, I'll be accountable. Like if for some reason the Helium network isn't available, here's your recourse, right? This is what you get. And so that's something that I think I'd like the ecosystem to do. I would like the People's Network to come up with that kind of solution. Helium certainly can. We're looking at it as well. One of our investors is Munich Re, the largest reinsurer in the world. That's their business, is SLAs and insurance policies. So we have a path.
It's wild to think of an insurance company as focused on SLAs. You're totally right, but just thinking out loud. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you could potentially automate that. Like if service goes down, they get some credit back, something like that. It sounds like it's definitely doable. Yeah.
It is easy. It's just, you know, again, Helium, and you mentioned this earlier, we're a small team. We're really lean and we have a lot to do. And so hence why I feel like open source is so important to us. We have got bigger problems to solve right now, as you're fully aware.
Frank, just to go to that coverage idea, like, and the products, like I love the Helium tabs and I think this is a great like proof of concept on using the network, but I think it's hard for people to contextualize like using IoT themselves. Like I think that they get it when it's embedded in a product. Like if I buy a dog collar off Amazon, it automatically has Helium in it. Not that I have to go to Helium and say, buy this, right? Do you think that people are going to interact with Helium more on like the products you and the community roll out, or it just being naturally embedded into products going forward?
No, I agree with you. I think you're right in that the more you can inject the Helium tech into everyday things, that's part of your behavior or part of your routine, right? That's the easiest way to go, at least in the consumer realm, when you start thinking mm-hmm. consumer. And this is where like, you know, we're working with Tile on a LoRaWAN compatible tile. You know, everyone has a tile. Like those are the things that I think make a difference in our ecosystem mm-hmm. and certainly in the LoRaWAN ecosystem. But I think it's early days still. I really do think when it comes to consumers, the idea of like, it doesn't matter what LoRaWAN is, right? It's about outcomes. What's the outcome I'm going to get? The outcome is if you had a LoRaWAN compatible dog collar that's running on Helium network, you wouldn't lose your dog. You would know where your dog is at all times. Just go buy that collar. And by the way, you wouldn't have to charge it every day or every other day, because the battery life on that thing would be 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
Mind blown. Oh, by the way, you don't have to pay AT&T $10 a month to collect the data.
Is that the alternative? Is that like the alternative for people? I don't think they understand how expensive the alternatives are here.
Honestly, dog lovers that have the cell collars, they know, and they're paying for it. And it's annoying and it doesn't work well. It's all these things, right? But I think it's early. And it's like any kind of tech adoption cycle. We're still in like the early adopter phase of this world that we're in, right? Very early adopter. And like, I would argue Helium is trying to pioneer the injection of both blockchain and IoT connectivity into a mainstream adoption cycle. We're trying to push it there using the idea of incentive to encourage a change in behavior. That's what we're doing. Same thing that Uber did, same thing that Airbnb did, right? In early days, dude, no one wanted to stay in a stranger's home. Today, we all do, right?
Yeah.
Weird.
Hey guys, I wanted to tell you about Delta Exchange. If you're looking to trade crypto futures and options, check out Delta Exchange, where you can trade futures on Bitcoin and leading altcoins with up to 100 times leverage. Delta also offers options on Bitcoin and altcoins, spread contracts, and interest rate swaps. Launched in 2018 and backed by industry leaders like CoinFund and Aave, Delta is a secure and trusted platform to trade crypto derivatives. Head over to delta.exchange to trade with strong liquidity and low trading fees. Now back to our episode.
So Frank, I mean, you guys have gone further than I thought you would have by now, to be honest. Like I didn't think you'd have this many nodes in the network, but I guess the thing that the thing I think about is how do you go from 12,000 nodes to 120,000 nodes, right? You really need that dev interest, that uptake. How do you think you guys get there? Is it just education, keep crushing, or what are the steps to get there?
Yeah, it's grinding. There's no secret sauce. There's no magic. It's a grind. It's hard. I can tell you, so the way I look at the audience here is we split into three ways. We have the network builders. That's the people's network, the people that want to either buy a compatible gateway and light it up with the mining capabilities. DIYers, right, are in that bucket as well. And then there's the bucket of users, people that can use the network and find good use out of it. And then there's a bucket of what I call the crypto enthusiasts. You know, they're in it for the crypto, right? They love HNT. I think they call themselves HNT Army now. And so we've got the people's network building it, we got users using it, and then we got this HNT Army that loves the HNT crypto piece of this. All three are crucial to this ecosystem. All three have to be healthy and thriving, right? And so today, I think Helium has to take on a lot of the work of the custodian and the facilitator to facilitate and make sure that all three parts of the system are well-oiled and are thriving and growing rapidly. And so I'll break down your question into three parts and address each, because I think each is very different. When it comes to network build-out, it's absolutely adoption by third parties, right? We see with Rack Wireless as an example. I mean, Helium over a year, we sold 12,000 units because it was expensive. It was like $500, $425 at best, right? It was always expensive. And we lost a ton of money doing that. That's why we don't want to build anymore. If we made a ton of money building it, we would continue to be in that business, right?
Stay in the hardware business.
Dude, yeah, of course. If we were actually profitable guys, we still be selling hotspots.
Why not? Right? Exactly.
Yeah, it's not profitable. We had to do it. We had to do it because no one believed us. But I think people believe us now. So there's a pipeline of hardware makers now waiting for their turn to start building the Helium hotspot. We got to solve a couple of issues on the blockchain related to trust to enable that. And that's like number one priority. That's in the works. Mm-hmm. Rack Wireless is the first, because Rack Wireless was our outsourced ODM for the original Helium hotspot. We know that team extremely well. Like, we've been out there to their factories. We spent months, almost 6 months to a year with them in person. So we know who they are. Like, we know the CEO, Ken. Like, the trust level is very high. That's why Rack Wireless was a low-hanging fruit. And they wanted to take the business. We told them, we can't do it. We cannot do this profitably. We just can't, because we don't sell hardware otherwise. But Rack builds, like, that's all they do. They build hundreds of thousands of pieces of hardware, right? So this is easy for them. And so they took it on. We're no longer involved. Dude, they've sold like 35,000 units, man. So you're worried about 120,000? Yeah. Dude, there's 35,000 they got to ship. As soon as they ship it and those go online, we go from 12,000 plus to 47,000. Like that.
Jesus.
Dude, wow. Like that. That's going to happen. It's going to happen between now and March. So from March to the end of next year, can we get to 100,000? Probably. I don't see why not. Because there's four other versions of racks coming.
Wow.
And the price is going down. It's only going to go down.
So the question isn't 100,000 units. The question is when you get to 1 million units, I guess.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound too far.
No, but that's what we need, right? Because exactly like Airbnb, if you want to change behavior, you need to have the network available. Once the network is available, then all of the LoRaWAN ecosystem, all of the applications, all of the amazing pieces of hardware that they build, like this Tektelec water leak detector. It doesn't have to be sexy stuff. It's things that help you control water, things to help you save and conserve, right? Our greatest natural resource, fresh water. It's like tracking your kids, tracking your dog, tracking your purse, right? Everyone needs to track their Louis Vuitton. Like, this is a Kiko product from Korea. It's been around for years, but people can't use it anywhere else but in Seoul, Korea. Well, you should be able to use it everywhere. This Tektelec sensor I showed you guys for water, it's awesome. It's like $20. It's super cheap. Everyone should have one. But we don't. We can't. It's the network's not there yet, right? And so that's why I think we are tackling this problem. It's for us, it's completely greenfield. I think for society, it's greenfield. If this network was there, then everything starts to happen. Like, I remember early days, I used to say we kind of live in a Flintstones age. We're like cavemen, cavewomen, you know? Things are still so manual. We should be in the Jetsons. We should be living in a Jetsons world. And these are cartoons from like before your time, right?
No, you're right. I mean, Frank, are there any wireless networks excluding those in space that span multiple continents? Like obviously the US, like Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, AT&T, like they're not in Europe and right. you know, the Vodafone is not here. Like are you guys, there's not that many.
In the LoRaWAN ecosystem, there's another group called the Things Network, and they've done a great job of using community involvement and volunteering and building networks. They've done a great job of expanding beyond just the European continent. They're in multiple places around the world. I think the only issue for the Things Network is a matter of incentive, right? Why would someone certainly can volunteer to help the community, but why would they do it long-term? There's not really incentive built in. And that's the only difference between Helium and what the Things Network has done is that we've added that.
Well, you're right. I mean, when I used to cover telcos at my last job, I mean, there was so many mesh networks trying to launch in like Africa and everyone would fail a month in. They get a ton of money because the incentives weren't there. Why degregate your hop? You know, more than three hops, your wireless signals get crushed. It just never worked.
Right.
Yeah. Just to round out just to go back to the TokenEcon a little bit, because I find the inverse TokenEcon really exciting. You guys recently introduced a new improvement proposal. I think it's called HIP-20. And basically what it does is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but basically you impose a semi-hard cap pretty much of around 230, 240 million HIP, because it just gets to a point where you know no more is basically issued. And instead of burning the HNT, which happens now, the HNT is like partially redistributed to nodes so that you can have the best of having a hard cap, but within that hard cap, you have the velocity of the HNT to run the network. I think that's incredible. What's the status there? And how's that going? And did I get that right?
No, you got it right. And I actually think you got it better than I do, I think. You've done a great job explaining it. This is a HIP proposal. So it's a Helium improvement proposal. We call it HIP. 20 is related to the HNT max supply. This is a proposal that was introduced by community members. Helium wasn't really, we weren't involved with this proposal, but community members like Fael and Tushar and Armand introduced it on November 4th. And it's going to basically create a net cap supply of, I think it's 240, but I think in reality, it's closer to 220 or something like that, 220 million versus 240 million.
Yeah, I think like 17 million were lost or burned. I forgot the number there, but there's some number there.
It's both.
Yeah.
Well, it's both burn. Also, block times were slower in the beginning because we had, we had blockchain issues, and due to that timing, we're not minting as many tokens as we wanted to, or as the blockchain had planned. So, just for the audience. Sake, we didn't pre-mine any tokens. So we're more like Bitcoin in that tokens only come through mining. And the goal is to not make it infinite supply. So we were infinite supply. And I think the issue with infinite supply from what we've seen is that it's hard for people to understand, especially folks that understand Bitcoin. They don't really understand this idea of infinite supply. And the other is on the burn and mint equilibrium side, to burn HNT at a faster pace means faster adoption of IoT applications as well as the IoT network from Helium. And that takes time. You know, what we've learned is that you get lots of pilots, lots of POCs, but for full-on at scale adoption, it just takes time. Companies have to go through their processes to reduce risk and ultimately decide to make a change. And changing is always the hardest part for any technology.
So yeah, no, I'm with you. The other thing is, obviously, having a greater burn is awesome, but I think having the hard cap in place just sends a great message to people that want to hold Helium, and not just users, but I mean, we talked earlier about those holding data credits on their balance sheet. I mean, you may have large Helium miners that want to hold HNT on their balance sheet instead of selling it, so it makes some more sense there.
It does, and also, I think from a crypto enthusiast perspective, like the third bucket that's very important for Helium is the crypto folks. It draws in, and I think a crypto audience that's used to mining, the blockchain audience, the Bitcoin audience. They understand the hard cap. They understand that mining rewards related to that is has a certain value behind it. And I think what we've done clever here that the community has done really is something called net emissions, which allows you to have a hard cap, but also allows you to be able to burn HNT and create more HNT on top of the cap as needed. And that net emissions idea enables Burn and Mint to coexist with a hard cap. So those are like innovations within the crypto blockchain world that I think are pretty cool. And I think especially folks in both the Bitcoin and Ethereum world, I hope they take note of it, because you know I know we're completely outside of those communities and outside of those circles, and I feel like we're many times outside of crypto in general. But I think this application, by being focused and being specific on our use case here related to connectivity and building out networks, I think it enables us to focus in on real applications that potentially can change economies. I mean, that's what we want to do, right? We want to create a network that changes the economy.
I think that's great. I mean, the way I see it from your perspective is that, I mean, you have those three groups you talked about, the builders, the users, then what was the last one? The crypto native.
The crypto, yeah.
The cool part is you have the crypto native people now evolving your token dynamics so that they could be able to coexist to help build a network. On the builder side, you have third parties rolling out cheaper products. And then back on the use case side, what's the biggest push there? I mean, is it, I saw a couple of months ago, you guys had like a plethora of like AWS integrations and things along those lines. How's that going?
It's great. So on the usage side, we do everything we can to lower barrier to usage, right? We have the data credit concept, which essentially, if you want to try Helium as a corporate entity, you could use your corporate credit card, and for a few $100, you could start to try. Heck, for $10, you can try. I mean, it's easy. It's very low barrier, right? And everything we do is low cost or no cost. It's open. It's free. Because we want adoption and we want people to use the network as much as we can. And so there, again, in that aspect, there's no like magic bullet here to all of a sudden, you know, recruit hundreds of thousands of devices. You know, I think at this point, we probably on our console, Helium Console, which is the onboarding platform, I think we're close to about 5,000 users now that's using Console. And that's everyone from customers trying the network to developers using our free tools. And we have like, I want to say 10 to 12,000 sensors now active on the network.
Wow.
It's constantly on. Now, it didn't just happen overnight. It's taken us all a lot of effort on the Helium side, on the sales and marketing, business development side, you know, nurturing customers and helping them understand that the risk of trying is very low. So having a leap of faith and trying that is important. The bigger the network has gotten, the more coverage that the People's Network has created, it's helped with that. It's really helped us, you know, drive belief that, hey, this is real. It's not vaporware. So that's one aspect. It's just Helium grinding it out. You know, we've got our internal BD teams split by region, focused on, you know, nurturing customers to try the Helium network. And we're also trying to establish partnerships in that world. Partnering with sensor makers like Tectelic and Digital Matters, application guys like Smart Mimic and Careband, those are important. And of course, you know, getting customers like Lime Scooters and Specialized Bikes and Nestle, and these are some big brands that are trying this. It's important. Again, it's slow. They're all going to be slow. They're all going to go through their process to determine if this is the right fit for them. But our job was just to make it low barrier, making trying super easy, right? And we just need to do this thousands of times over, not just in the US, but we need to do this in Europe, in China, in Southeast Asia. And this is where the expansion of Helium is really focused. We are trying to build networks in Europe. We're trying to build networks in Southeast Asia and China. We're doing it on our own with third-party manufacturers building hotspots. I'm trying to get the attention of guys like Things Network and just work out a partnership to convert them all onto Helium. That way you have a massive global network instantly and have them use the network. Like Helium Inc. as a company is just an enabler. We open source everything we do. We don't make any money on any of this stuff, right? We want everyone to take it and use it as much as we can. And so it's almost like we're like the Linux Foundation in the world of Linux, right?
And yeah, and Frank, just to dig in at one point, just brought up the community. How did you, like, what was the role though in like getting the sub communities live? Because like when I got my nodes, I wanted to upgrade my antennas, and I'm pretty sure I found a Discord channel with like 300 people in it. We're all going back and forth on what antennas.
Yeah.
And people were literally testing like you know, the range of these things in real time and the power and should use different supplies. It was crazy. Like, how do you incentivize those niche communities?
Man, you know, that is, we really didn't do much to incentivize folks in the early days. Gosh, in the early days, I think our community was on Slack. We weren't even
that was probably it. Yeah, yeah.
we were on Slack at the time, and what we had, like, a couple of folks that are like really technical on the IoT side. They were radio wave engineers, or they were signals and systems background. And I think because their day job was related to this, in that they understood connectivity, they understand networking, and they understood antennas and physics. They were just in their spare time on Slack, helping everyone and giving suggestions on antennas, how to mount them, how to ground them. Those were just like grassroots efforts. Helium, we didn't give them anything. Like, we did not give them anything other than the fact that they were passionate and they believed that this could be the way in which a new network could grow. And they were just helping us along. A lot of IoT folks believe in our fundamental premise that the reason why IoT hasn't picked up and hasn't grown to the promise that you know, a lot of researchers have talked about is because there is no network. There's no cheap, low cost, unified, like, global network that allows them to connect to the internet. It just doesn't exist, right? Everyone that's tried to build it, like you mentioned, they all try to tax. There's always this like rent, this idea that they want to be rent seekers, right? Every part of the process, you want to collect little bits of money. Well, that's exactly the wrong way. As soon as you do that for little sensors, the economics doesn't work.
And it's fair because it hasn't.
No, yeah. It hasn't. And so we can't do it that way. That's why this blockchain is, for us, really the answer. The cryptocurrency is the answer for this. There is no rent seeking here. It's owned by everyone. You all benefit. The entire ecosystem benefits if we all group together and build it together. We just need to expand beyond the US. Like, we have to go into Europe through either partnerships with guys like Things Network or ourselves. We have to go to Asia. We have to go to China. There are just mass amounts of applications, a lot of innovation in IoT happening elsewhere that could use this network right away. And so
I'm with you. I totally agree with you. And Frank, just in closing, this has been awesome. I mean, what are the biggest risks to Helium? Like, there's a lot, right? Like, is it the H&T price? Is it the tech, which we didn't have time to get into? We'll do that on another podcast. Or is it, you know, could AT&T and Verizon drop their IoT costs to $0 for a month? Like, what are the biggest risks in your mind?
I think it's probably education and awareness and speed of doing that. In the beginning, if you asked me this question, you know, 16 months ago or 12 months ago, when we were just launching in Austin, Texas, I would tell you, hey, it's like adoption. Like, I'm worried that people won't do this. I'm no longer worried now. I know people are going to do this. And it's not even us pushing it anymore. It's the People's Network. It's H&T Army. They're pushing it, which is fantastic. I think for us, it's the two things that matter most is continuous momentum with our community. It can't just be Helium taking on the burden of driving usage. We need the community. We need the H&T Army. We need the People's Network to drive usage also. It can't just be us, because we can only do so much. And I think so we have to be smarter there, especially as we expand outside the US and we get into markets that have different cultures, different practices, different behaviors. We need local ambassadors there. And so our ability to expand internationally, I think, is a huge milestone. That's a huge milestone we have to achieve. And we can't do it alone. We need the community to help us here. The other absolutely is H&T value. Like, how H&T value is in the marketplace. I would be lying if I ignored that, right? That is absolutely, because that's the incentive. Mm-hmm. So if the network is 50,000 hotspots, what's the incentive for the 50,001 person in China or in Japan or in South Korea to go and buy a hotspot and do it? It's because H&T value keeps going like this, right? It doesn't matter if you're mining one token a week or half a token. It won't matter if the value keeps going up, right?
Well, the crazy part is, I mean, when you go from 12,000 nodes to 120,000 nodes at an issuance rate that's potentially halving every 2 years under the new HIP, I mean, that's, you know, a tenth of the rewards to the nodes, and then the halving impedes that. I mean, that yeah, it definitely makes sense that there are incentives to get involved.
Yeah. And there's absolute risk there, right? That's a huge risk in that.
Yeah.
If you have, and the value doesn't double, that's a problem.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, let's just be open about it. We can't control that. I don't know how to control that. We shouldn't control that. That is sort of a world of trading and whatever that we can't touch. Helium isn't involved. So I don't know. It's really up to the community. Like, if everyone believes that this network should exist and needs to exist in the long term, then these are all the things that have to happen. You know, I think for Helium, just in closing with you guys on the tech side, we realized Helium isn't a company that's trying to make money in IoT. We're not that. We are purely, we've become purely a blockchain crypto company that has a massive use case, and it's called building wireless networks. That's what we do. We do it through incentive of the blockchain itself. Today we're addressing the greenfield. It's all greenfield with IoT. There's a massive need. Wi-Fi 6 in certain countries, Wi-Fi is a problem. There isn't Wi-Fi available everywhere in parts of Africa. In Nairobi and Kenya, it's an issue. Can Helium solve that? Absolutely. Helium's blockchain can run on Wi-Fi 6. There's no reason it can't. We have prototypes. It works. We don't talk about it much, right? Because we want to focus. We're staying focused. We want the community to focus. But could Helium blockchain run on Wi-Fi and create Wi-Fi networks? Yes, it can. Could we
incredible.
Can we run on 5G microcells and provide 5G network coverage around the world? Yes, we can. That's the future. So if you think about, where is Helium going to go? Where is the 35 people that we have today? Where are we taking this? We are taking this to Crown Castle, and we're taking this to American Tower and all the other tower guys around the world. Their business is over. Helium is coming. 5G networks will all be on Helium.
So, Frank, I can't let you go with that. I'm too interested in that. What does that mean, though? Do people go out and buy 5G nodes and then they run the Helium network on that node, and it's a different network from the IoT, or just a different bandwidth amount? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so I think the best applications, if you think about it, is, you know, in Africa, where infrastructure is all new. Instead of one conglomerate going into Africa and building and rolling out 5G towers, every person in Africa, or in, let's just use Nairobi or Kenya, every person could become a tower, and every person can offer 5G connectivity using unlicensed spectrum in 5G. Or if we can partner with a telco provider in Nairobi, in Kenya, the government can allow for their spectrum to run and use Helium's blockchain, so that the Apple phones and the Android phones in that country all use some Helium blockchain as a means to create for network creation, as well as packet transfers. That's what I'm talking about. Our blockchain can become the spark and incentive to create wireless connectivity that's owned and powered by the people. The people's network could power everything. It doesn't have to be just IoT.
I don't think people, like, you know, you jump country to country. I mean, the dynamics are so different. Like in Africa, I mean, it's so hard to build cell towers because, frankly, they get destroyed all the time. There's different incentives there for people. Like, if you have people that are incentivized to protect a common resource that they can all actually pursue, like, that's a pretty interesting kind of way deploy things.
And we're not saying it's not Helium owned, right? We're not saying, oh, Helium's going to go raise a bunch of money and start to build towers. We're not. We're going to say to the people there, here you go. Here is a 5G Helium hotspot, open sourced. Take it. Go and build your own network. Here you go.
Yeah, that's Frank. I'm amped to have you on again soon, man. What's your schedule like tomorrow? Frank, this has been awesome, man. I really appreciate your time. Obviously, huge fan. Full disclosure, I own Helium and a bunch of nodes as well, and I'll probably end up getting some more at some point. But Frank, thanks again for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate the opportunity to tell our story. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.